The Mother with the Hat is a new play about addiction, honesty, friendship, love, fidelity, betrayal, sobriety, and a hat. It examines those things that we're able to surrender and the ones we cannot live without. The Mother with the Hat is currently playing at the Gerald Schoenfeld Theater on West 45th Street. And joining me today are three members of its excellent cast, Barbie Cannavale and Elizabeth Rodriguez, who play Jackie, an ex-con and ex-addict just out of prison, and his girlfriend Veronica, a couple who have been together since the eighth grade, and Yul Vasquez, who plays Jackie's cousin Julio. They've all been nominated for Tony Awards, as has the play, the director, and the set designer, and I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show.
Thank Hello. You.
Excellent.
Considering the intensity of energy that you three generate on the stage, I was a little worried about dealing with all of you here today. Yul, if I mess up in any way, I want you to promise you won't get all Van Damme on me, okay?
No, I won't.
That's so funny.
That's one of the jokes in the play.
The Van Damme line, yes. I don't think he's been relevant for a long time, so we actually didn't know if anybody was actually going to get that.
Look, the audience laughs its head off. You threaten to Van Damme somebody if he can get our time.
That's funny, though, what you said about, being worried about like those characters being in here. Michael Riedel wrote something kind of nasty about Steven the week before we opened, and then he invited us on the show after we opened to good reviews and we're hit all of a sudden. And and Chris said something very funny. He said, the thing I don't understand about what you said was, why would you go after a guy who wrote a play called The Mother with the Hat?
Like, yeah.
You know, it's not like he said, it's not like you're picking on the guy who wrote Driving Miss Daisy. He said, aren't you a little worried about a guy who wrote this play coming after you? It's very funny.
Well, there was concern, I'm sure, that the name itself would scare some people off.
Yeah. And I think it did. I'm sure it did, specifically through previews in terms of the theater goers that we're used to seeing going to the theater because of the name. And I think we had limited publicity in certain ways because in terms of posters, in terms of what do you do and who was our audience. And I think the reviews kind of opened those doors and allowed Broadway to accept us and the play.
Rave reviews. But
yes.
Then it doesn't hurt that you got all those Tony nominations. Right. Now, Bobby, this is not your first, so I guess this is already old hat for you, but...
Oh, I wouldn't say that. It's definitely not. And I tell you, the experience is completely different. I mean, Mauritius had closed 6 months earlier, so I really was out of the loop. And so it's an amazingly different feeling to be in a show at the same time that this is happening.
And Yul and Elizabeth, this is not only your first nomination, but your Broadway debuts as well.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little surreal.
Was it awkward for your co-stars, Chris Rock and Annabelle Shore, who also give terrific performances?
No, not at all. They were really,
just happy
really lovely.
For you.
Phone calls.
Yeah, we got phone calls immediately. Yeah. They, you know, they're just gracious about it. I don't know what they do privately.
You know what, man? It's a 5-character play, and there's not anything extemporaneous about any of these characters. So we've been connected, and we've been a unit, and since day one, and we really. It's an important part of making this show work is being connected, and we're all very connected and supportive of each other.
Absolutely.
Well, there were people who thought perhaps that Chris Rock was there to bring in audiences, he's turned out to be a pretty good actor.
I mean, he's a huge star, so But I think what happened was that the play became the star, and that was evident after those reviews came out and people started coming to the show, and the word of mouth on the show was also, about that the show was great.
You don't have a Hispanic accent?
I don't.
That's so funny, I can always tell because you're Cuban, but yeah. You definitely put something on more for Cousin Julio, but it's interesting that...
Yeah. I grew up... I'm actually going to take these off because they're actually not working.
Okay. You could turn the knob a little bit.
I did it. I don't think it's...
Okay. He took off his headphones.
I did. I removed my headphones, but my clothes are still on. I don't have an accent. I was born in Cuba, but I came to this country when I was very, very young, and I grew up with...
Because you really do play with that accent.
I do. I do play with it. Because the character, as we say in the show, has come from, you know, when I first came to the States from PR, you know, and Jackie was already here, and Jackie was the guy who looked out for me. So he's a more recent arrival than Jackie, who was probably born.
My mother came here when she was 17 from Puerto Rico, and she never lost her accent. And my father came here when he was in junior high school and had lost his accent. I think
there's that window.
Yeah.
I think it's before you're 16 or so.
Yeah.
There's a terrific opening scene. Elizabeth, you begin the play talking on the telephone to your mother. What did you think when you first read that monologue? Is it as much fun to do as it is to watch? Because it's really hilarious.
Yes, it actually is. It was actually, I think, twice as long when I first read it. It is a lot of fun, and I'm still finding moments of like, oh, you know what? I can be a little more exasperated here, and it's fun to sort of care for your mother and be exasperated by her and communicate that way to her and know that you're trying to get a point across and that you ultimately love her, and yet, you know, you can't help but talk about
it. But it gives us a real insight into who this character is.
Absolutely.
She is smart, tough, and really messed up.
Yes, she is all of that.
You know, my favorite part of that is at the end of the conversation when she says, I love you too.
And I promise that we'll eat ice cream.
It says something about the character too, you know? Yeah. It's brilliant writing.
Yeah.
Well, you've all been in Stephen Adly Gurgis' plays in the past?
I have not.
You haven't?
I have.
This is my third one of his plays.
I think it's my third or fourth. Fourth. We did one in L.A.
This is the first one of his to be produced on Broadway.
Yes. Correct. It's an amazing thing for him. I'm so, so happy. Yeah.
Well, you know, we never thought, honestly, we'd be doing this show on Broadway.
Yeah.
You know, we're a downtown theater company. The play's title, from a marketing standpoint, is an absolute nightmare.
I think he wrote the title because he didn't think it was going to go to Broadway as well. He didn't consider that when he wrote it. It was always going to go to the public and then possibly move, but we sort of went straight to Broadway with a play, a world premiere, which is really scary.
So do you get theater parties from the suburbs? Because if they do come,
I feel like the word of mouth, you know, it's like really, really an amazing thing to have been a part of. It really has built on a word of mouth. I think on paper, it's not anything that anybody thinks would work on Broadway. You know, we know Broadway's expensive. It's a big business. And yet it's been amazing to see something that we've believed in so, so much, a downtown type play, succeed on Broadway. And everybody's coming now.
Yeah. But people that just don't go to theater, when I go outside and sign the playbills, I'm constantly thanking people for coming to the theater because I go to the theater and those are not the people I sit next to.
Mm-hmm.
I met a woman named Enid the other day. So, you know, nobody kills the kid Enid anymore, right? So she was a woman of a certain age. And she even told me, listen, I didn't want to see it. But I'm a voter, and I had to go. And I couldn't move afterwards. I was so moved by that play. She loved it so much. And it's fantastic to hear that.
Are people concerned about your health? The night I went, you banged your head in the scenery.
Oh, you were there that night?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm like a walking time bomb.
You know, when you're at a show that has no intermission, and suddenly there's an intermission, and somebody says, "Is there a doctor in the house?"
Oh yeah,
I know. I've never been in the theater. I thought
you
had
because your performance is so intense. I thought you'd had a heart attack or something.
Oh, gosh, knock on wood. No. I had an accident backstage. I have I don't have very much time in between the scenes, and you know. I wish I could say it was something cooler than it was, but I literally ran into a doorpost that hasn't moved in 4 months. So, but I will.
And you had a bandage on the bridge of your nose for the rest of the performance.
Yeah, I got eight stitches up here above my eye. Actually,
so is that what happened? They had to give you some stitches before?
No. We just had to stop the bleeding because the head bleeds a lot. So I couldn't get the bleeding to stop, and then we finally kind of did and put a Band-Aid and then went back out and just kept changing the Band-Aid.
And the show must go on.
Yes.
It has to.
Now, your character is recently released from prison and has just found a job. I love the little gifts that he's brought home to Veronica Elizabeth's character to celebrate getting a new job. You want to mention some of the things he's brought?
A chocolate bar, a lotto ticket, a little tiny fuzzy bear that grips, and movie tickets to go to the movie.
And I guess that's one of the...
And they're all in his pockets.
That's one of Stephen Adly Gurgis' playwright's gifts, his ability to recognize the small things that can be so important. But later in the play, Chris Rock's character blames the failure of your relationship on your not providing a refrigerator that has an ice maker.
Yeah, yeah, one that makes crushed ice. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's where the conflict sort of bears itself at the end. There is, you know, that these two people believe in two completely different things, and I think again, it's great writing. You know, he presents two arguments, and I've talked to theater goers who've seen this play and have said, you know, when he was making some sense, I got to say, but then you spoke, and then I was back on your side, and I think that's just a sign of a good dramatist. Yeah.
I was talking about that yesterday, about how that. In that scene, the audience literally flips from one side to the other through the entire scene.
Yeah.
Is every character in this play either an active addict or an ex-addict or something in between?
Julio is
not
it?
Julio.
Yeah,
Julio's made his peace in his life. You know, he's married and he's sexually confused, maybe. Or
well,
you
he's
know.
A kind of a metrosexual.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah. You know.
I think
but he's a health freak and
he's the most honest.
But I think he's kind of the honest reporter of the play in a way, because he's the one guy the audience knows, well, this guy's a health nut and he's not addicted, so we can sort of, you know, listen to what he's saying and believe what he's saying about other people, which is kind of what I do. You know, I don't talk about me in the play. I really speak about others. But because he's made sort of this peace in his life, it affords him the ability to sort of impart some wisdom and help his cousin.
Well, I mentioned that he is kind of a metrosexual. But do you think of him as gay, even though he's married?
He's gay. Mm-hmm. He's gay, but he's married to a woman. So, you know. That sometimes confuses people, you know, but it's a guy we've all known. I mean, and I don't think we've ever seen actually on stage. At least I haven't.
The guy who's at peace with it, like you said.
Right.
Well, he's the only person who's kind of honest, although there's a certain amount of dishonesty in this as well. But this is a lot about – the play is about honesty, don't you think? How, and how important it is for people to be completely honest with each other.
Yeah,
because
I think
people want to. Because it starts off with lies. You lie to Bobby's character.
I lie to myself. Mostly. I think it is about honesty, but also hypocrisy. I think ultimately everyone wants to be honest in theory, but it's just so much easier not to be. And I think like in life. You know, searching for that honesty for yourself constantly is a huge challenge.
And the whole thing's a gray area, isn't it, really? I mean, and I think the play presents that, you know, that I don't think there's a single character in the play who's either right or wrong, mm-hmm. clearly. I think life is complicated. And I think, like, you know, taking a step in the right direction is ultimately what happens with all these characters, I think. I think Julio's, Yule's right. He's sort of the honest reporter. But I think everybody takes a step, whether it's the revelation that Chris makes, whether it's Annabella leaving the house. Yes, she comes back. But there's something happens. That relationship has changed.
And the end of
she
our
makes
relationship.
She takes a step. I take a step. And that's really life. It's not about changing your life overnight.
Yeah.
But taking a step in a direction that maybe might feel a little better than the same rigmarole.
Yeah.
Now, what does this do to you emotionally? At the end of the performance I went to, Elizabeth, your face was covered with tears. And I thought, I mean, actors can cry often just as part of the craft. But still, you really had to work yourself into a situation where those tears came flowing out, and it was so odd when you were doing the curtain call.
And it's always odd.
I'm so still, miserable.
I know. I try to take it in and sort of get beyond my moment. What does it do to me? Well, I feel like I fully go through it. My body doesn't know that I'm on stage, and there's no other way to do this play mm-hmm. than to emotionally dive in and feel and have my heart broken 8 times a week by Bobby's character.
Well, you've been part of the Labyrinth Company in the past, right?
For 12 years, I think, 13 years.
You and Yule?
Yeah.
I'm one of the original members of the company.
That's with Philip Seymour Hoffman as well?
Yes.
Yes. And I'm the I'm a current co-artistic director of the company, along with Stephen Adligirgis and Mimi O'Donnell,
who's also our costume designer.
So, would this thing originally have been something that Labyrinth would have put out?
The inception of it was at the lab, at our intensive, and they're producers on this. And without the Labyrinth Theater Company, we wouldn't have an art. I wouldn't have an artistic home. This play, Stephen wouldn't have a place, and so all of Stephen's plays have started and were nurtured there, and they are a huge part of what's going on right now.
This is a rarity. It's like what Shakespeare had, actually, a company that he knew he could write plays.
It's amazing.
It's important. You know, Stephen started as an actor.
Exactly.
And really found his voice as a writer at the Labyrinth.
So how did you wind up with this, Bobby?
I became a member a couple of years ago, and I've known everybody here for a very long time. I went to a reading of it at the Barn Series, which is something we do at the lab, and I was knocked out, and I didn't think I was going to be a part of it. And then they asked me to audition, and I did.
It sounds like your part was written for you.
No, it definitely wasn't. All of them.
No, it wasn't written for me either.
It's his now.
Yes, forever.
You know, forever. I mean,
it wasn't written. The first scene was fully written for two other people for an acting class, a scene class. So when I got the first scene, I was actually really happy that it wasn't written for me at first.
You might have taken it personally. Because Veronica is not the most lovable person in the world.
And the play wasn't fully realized. We had just seen, so I didn't know her journey. I trusted and know that Stephen does that with every single one of his most unlikely characters, finds the heart in them. But I experienced that first scene the way the audience did.
My guests are three of the stars of The Mother. I feel so weird saying The Mother with the Hat. It kind of sounds like Driving Miss Daisy or something like that, about a woman who had a hat.
Well, you know, think of this, Lennon?
I cannot say the
word. This. I know you can't. But I was just saying, you know, it's a piece of literature, yes? And so the title of the play is the title of the play. I don't mind. I know for marketing we have to call it The Mother with the Hat. We all do it. But it's a funny thing, isn't it? I mean, it's the title of the play.
Well, the FCC is going to give me trouble.
Yeah, I know.
No, we know here.
And the New York Times doesn't even write Mother.
Blank.
They write The Dash with the Hat.
No, but we were at this Tony luncheon the other day, and even in a closed room, and people there wouldn't say it.
Some people did.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just seems like even if you have a problem cursing, you should be able to say the title of a book or a play because it's what it is and it's what the artist intended.
We definitely understand the FCC.
Yeah.
There's a lot about AA in this.
Yes.
And Stephen has written about religion and cults before. Do you think he sees AA as a kind of a cult?
Stephen puts it very eloquently, I think. He says he believes that the AA book, the big book, and their tenets are actually perfect. Technically, they're perfectly written. It's the people who are effed up and the people who manipulate it. And the actual program itself is actually perfect. And I tend to agree with that.
We have very little time, but I just want to ask each of you how you wound up getting involved in theater in the first place. Is this something you all wanted to do when you were kids?
No. I never set out to be an actor. I was in a rock band.
Uh-huh. So the performance.
I had a performance background, but I didn't. Acting came to me later in life, and it's not anything that I, you know, and I actually started working in films before I started working in theater. So I've done it all backwards.
So did I.
It's all makes no sense.
You worked in film first?
I did TV, and it was sort of by accident. I had friends in the music industry, and they had a TV show, and the producer saw me being me and was like, wanted me to audition to sort of be me but bigger in the second season, and then I knew that that's what I wanted to do, and so I knew I needed to study. Mm-hmm. And so I did, and I started landing television spots first. The theater was the last thing I did as well.
I always wanted to do it since I was a kid, and I was the only thing I could ever remember wanting to do, and did a lot of theater as a kid.
Yeah, you were very close to Lanford Wilson, weren't you?
That was like my
pretty great
education.
Playwright died last year. Was he a mentor?
Big time, the biggest one that I had. Yeah, I was, you know, 21 years old and coming across the river. I grew up in New Jersey right there, Union City, and I'd come into these backstage open call auditions, and I wasn't really getting anywhere. It was all fine, though. And then I met Lanford. I auditioned for the Circle Rep, and he just took me under his wing and taught me everything I really know about this.
This is an open run, isn't it?
No, July 17th.
July 17th.
Yeah.
Why?
We just extended for 3 weeks, so you never know.
Yeah, July 17th, Chris Rock will be with his family on July 18th. He wants to spend the summer with his girls.
Uh-huh. Well, I can think of some other wonderful people who could play that part, no?
Yeah.
But meanwhile, we have the three of the wonderful actors from this five-member ensemble cast. We have Elizabeth Rodriguez, Bobby Cannavale, and also Yul Vasquez. They are three of the stars of The Mother with the Hat, which is currently playing at the Gerald Schoenfeld Theater on West 45th Street, a street that has three incredible plays all across the street from each other.
Absolutely.
Just amazing. Jerusalem. We're going to be talking about Jerusalem tomorrow.
Great. It's so great.
The great Mark Rylance.
And he'll be here again. And I thank all three of you for coming by today.
Thank you, Leonard, so much.